Welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 26.
Welcome to the Fanboys Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm David.
And we are the Fanboys Who Strike Back. Every week we buy our comics, we read our comics, and we go to our website and we post a review, and we also come here and we talk about that comic and what else came out that week that struck our fancy. We're also going to be doing a top five this week of the top five teams throughout comics that, and by that, not creative teams, but actual teams. That we've enjoyed the most throughout the years. So with that, also we will be talking about everything that happens in the books. We do tend to go into great detail about the plot lines, so
yes,
just
we do.
Be warned. So with that, David had the task of picking the book of the week this week, and I was happy with what he got.
Yeah, you know, I really thought we had some big X-Men events going on. I really thought the X-Men are Astonishing was going to take the cake, but I got a little book called Young Avengers Presents Patriot Number 1 by Ed Brubaker and Paco Medina. And this book was just amazing. It was very simple, and like I said in my review, it's basically a hero's quest story. I've talked a little bit about Young Avengers and how much I love the book. I think it's one of the best books that's come out in the past couple years. I'm a big fan of the Titans, but I think Young Avengers improved on the Titan formula because, you know, it was written by Alan Heinberg, who's a famous TV writer of the OC, Grey's Anatomy. And I think the one thing that Young Avengers has over the Titans, with, you know, Alan Heinberg being the writer, is that it's a superhero book, but it's very much believable in the modern world. Like, And I mean, the Titans were invented a long time ago. You kind of look at them, you can still, like, you still see that it's kind of cheesy. It's kind of in the 80s, kind of the 60s, 70s, all that stuff. But Young Avengers seems like it's, you know, happening, you know, 2007. The bad thing about the book is that Heinberg was never on time, and he finally ended his first arc, and that was a couple years ago, and we still haven't seen the second arc. So what they're going to do is they have Young Avengers Presents, and they're going to have a different writer for each of the, I think it's 6 issues, and they're going just to talk about one of the individual characters. And in this first issue, Brubaker talks about Patriot, who's the team leader. You know, as an African-American male, I had a very strong connection to this book, because basically Patriot, who is a young black kid, he's struggling with the fact that not only does he not know what he wants to do as a hero and what he's supposed to do, but, I mean, he's struggling with being, you know, a stereotypical young black angry man, you know, dealing with just life. And just as that in itself, the book was great. But there's also how his family, basically, is the biggest part of the story. And there was a book, a little miniseries that came out a couple years ago called Truth. And it was very controversial. And basically the topic of the story was that before Steve Rogers was given the super soldier serum, it was tested on black soldiers first. And basically all the soldiers died except for one, named Isaiah Bradley, and he became the black Captain America. So he was basically the first Captain America. And I love this story, obviously. It was a great book. It's very in your face, and I mean, it's very out there, but it was a great story. And you find out that Eli, who's Patriot, he's the grandson of Isaiah. He really feels like he has something that he has to live up to. I mean, the serum that they gave his grandfather, Isaiah, just racked his body. And so now he's this old man who, you know, sits in a chair all day. His mind's barely there. He can't move. And, you know, Eli sees that every day, and it just, his heart goes out to him. And he just wants so badly to make his family proud and to, like, prove that to himself that he can do something. And you just really get that feeling in this book.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't ever read the Young Avengers series, for whatever reason. But I picked this book up because I was late getting my books this week, so I saw that you picked it, so I wanted to pick it up just so I had something to talk about with it. It's a very formulaic story. Like, there's not any kind of twists and turns that really surprise me. It's Hero's Quest. It's an origin story of sorts. But that's fine. And, you know, especially coming in, because I think a lot of people will probably be like me. They might pick up the book and they miss the first series for whatever reason. And so that it was a perfect introduction for me. I really enjoyed it. But it also, you know, in an age when, especially American politics, and especially with the current political situation with our policy overseas, is so very cloudy and in a very gray area, you know, depending on whatever side you're on. And I'm not declaring a side here, but I'm just saying it is a very gray area. I thought this book dealt with what it means to be patriotic very, very well. And kind of trying to read it through David's eyes, especially, and I could see very, very much why you'd identify with the character and everything like that. It was a very, very great book. I always like when Bucky shows up, so that was an additional good thing. And this is kind of another thing that relates to the Titans a bit is, you know, you have the older generation of sidekicks, and then you have the younger generation. And I feel like Bucky was kind of he's kind of the Nightwing of the Marvel universe.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I feel like he's one of the original sidekicks. And he definitely is if you look at comics continuity, like, throughout the ages. And so I love the moment at the end where, you know, they talk about the original Patriot, and he just kind of sits down with them. And granted, there was a lot of good parts here where Bucky was like, he was trying to explain to Eli, you know, what it means to be a patriot, and he's like, man, you know, Steve was really a lot better at this than I was, and it's true. Like, they were trying to have that Captain America moment without Captain America being there, but I thought it was really good how he did kind of just say, you know, well, you know, sit down, I'll tell you about him, and I'll tell you about, you know, your predecessor and stuff like that, and I just thought it was a really good character moment between the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this book is exactly what it should be, and it's basically just taking one of the characters and just dissecting them. Like Eric said, it's perfect for someone who has never read Young Avengers, and I mean, it's great for even if you did read Young Avengers, because that was years ago. So, I'm really hoping that, I mean, because Young Avengers was huge, it was very popular, it sold really well. You know, I can't really say I agree with Marvel's decision not to go along with it without Heinberg. I think that it's a really good franchise and that they just need to let someone do it. But, I mean, that's their decision. I just hope that after this miniseries, we actually see an ongoing title because, I mean, I just want it.
Well, I was also glad to see, because we did see the Young Avengers sporadically throughout Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we've seen them anywhere since then. So it was kind of...
I mean, their book ended years ago, and you've seen them in Civil War, and they've had little miniseries, but, I mean, you see them in the Initiative. Like, they're scattered around, and that's cool, but, like, you don't have... I mean, some people who are reading that are just like, okay, I know who this character is, but I don't really know anything about this character because they're just kind of thrown places.
Yeah. Well, it was good. I'm actually really excited to learn, or to read the Hawkeye issue.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And it has Wiccan and Speed. Did you ever read House of M, Eric? You read
no.
that, right?
No.
No?
No.
Well, Wiccan and Speed are two characters in the Young Avengers, and you find out that basically that they are the twins that Wanda Maximoff thought she had. Because basically Wanda, using her powers, made twins. She made sons. And they were somehow unmade. And that was part of the House of M. And then you find out that Billy and his brother are the actual, her twin sons. And that Billy has her powers and, Spin. And Speed has the powers of Quicksilver. So I'm really looking forward to those issues and finding out more about the twins.
Granted, that was only like one sentence, but that confused me so badly.
Yes, well, that's usually what happens when we start getting into X-Men... Avengers crossover continuity.
Speaking of X-Men, let's talk about the book that I threw down in anger after reading this week. The book that
Well, I think you might be referring to X-Men number 207, the last chapter in the Messiah Complex story.
Yes, damn it. This was
You okay, Eric? You don't seem too happy.
okay, I'm still waiting for a payoff with this. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to come in as a new X-Men reader. Like, I'm trying to get on board, and God knows, it's hard to come in on an X-Men
book. It is hard.
It's hard. And so I thought, okay, Messiah Complex, like, I've read a few books leading up to it. I can get in here. And now, like, all this was an advertisement for me to buy 7 more books. And nothing happened. Okay. Here's my big gripe of the story was the way this ended with, despite the death, spoiler, of Xavier, it ended exactly where, like, things were, you know, at issue, or at number 2 of the series. Like, Cable had the baby. The mansion was destroyed. Rogue was still pissed off and had someone in her head. And the whole thing with Predator X, like, what was the point of that? Did that even need to be there? That was just fight fodder. That's all it was.
Okay. As a diehard X-Men fan, I want to fight you on what you're saying, like, so badly, but I can't, because you're absolutely correct. And we've been talking about it the whole time. We've been talking about, like, the Messiah Complex has been really good, but nothing's happened. But it's been really good, but nothing's happened, so hopefully something happens. And, yeah. The whole thing with Predator X is that if you're reading new X-Men, that's a payoff for you, because basically Predator X was created by the Purifiers because they had knowledge of the future from Nimrod, who was a Sentinel, and so they knew the baby was going to be born, and so Predator X was bred for that purpose. And I think that was something that, I mean, everyone hated Predator X in the story, and I think it's understandable. I think they should have established, like, why that the Predator was in there, and they never did. And granted, you know, Wolverine kills it in the end, and it's really cool when he kills it, but it still doesn't make sense.
I just felt like a lot of this was, for me, like, the stereotypical X-Men idea that I had in my head before this was the X-Men was just a lot of fighting, a lot of flash. And I know that's not all of it, because I've read some X-Men stories that the poignant ones, like, I really like, and they can be very good, and X-Men stories, when done well, can say very good things about society and everything like that. But yeah, this was just, like, gratuitous fighting throughout the whole time. And I don't mind that sometimes, like, you know, half, 60%, 70% action, fine, but I need something to happen. And the fact that, like, we never really found out who the baby was, like, if it's Jean, it's just as bad as not finding out, because that's stupid. Let Jean Grey rest in peace.
But no, you're getting away from yourself there. No, we want Jean Grey back. We want Jean back. Of course we do. Come on.
Here's
a problem with this story. A main problem with this story is that it was, if you were, like, a hardcore X-Men fan, I think you would like this story. But if you are a casual to beginning X-Men fan, this story is not for you. And that's what crossover should be. Like, crossover should be for the hardcore fan, but they should also be, like, very easy jumping on points. And this was not at all. I mean, overall, what had happened was, okay, Wolverine destroys Predator X. Rogue planned everything so that the baby would be able to, or Mystique planned everything so the baby would be able to heal Rogue, and somehow the baby does heal Rogue from all the millions of minds that Rogue had absorbed. Cable gets the baby and takes him into the future, and there is a very, very, I mean, it looks like the baby is somehow Jean, or somehow related to Jean. Scott has a baby, and the baby is shown with fiery red hair, green eyes, and the baby is attached to Scott's locket, which has a picture of him and Jean. Cable takes the baby into the future. Bishop gets upset and tries to shoot at Cable, but shoots him Xavier instead.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can say. I mean, we've been here so many times. Xavier's been shot a lot. Xavier has been on the threat of dying a lot.
Here's another thing I didn't get, is, like, okay, Xavier dies, and the only thing that they can do is, like, that's it, the X-Men are over. Like, do you think if Xavier died, like, Scott would carry on the dream and stuff like that, and that's the way it always kind of was supposed to be?
Well, yeah. Like, but I mean, but he's not dead. I mean, it even says afterwards that X-Men the regular book is going to be named X-Men Legacy now. And that's going to deal pretty much solely around Xavier. Apparently he's fighting for his life, is what they're saying. But yes, I agree, because if Xavier got shot, they wouldn't all just sit there. I mean, they would be trying to help him.
Yeah,
and they just kind of sat there.
They were all just, like, standing there looking at him, and it's like, no one's rushing to get an ambulance, no one's doing anything. They'd be checking him. The only thing, I'll probably buy Legacy, because I am curious to see where that goes. Actually, the best part of this for me was the Madrox stuff and the Janie stuff, so I am going to start picking up X-Factor.
Yes. I think anyone should pick up X-Factor. Even if you are not an X-Men fan, X-Factor is very disconnected from the rest of X-Men continuity, so you could easily pick that up. I mean, I'm a big fan of Cable. I'm very intrigued about Cable having the baby, and Cable is now in the future, so I'll be picking that up. I don't know. I mean, I really want to try to defend the story, but I can't, because there was just too many holes.
Yeah.
So, that was a side complex.
Conclusion to it. So, Teen Titans, number 55 this week. It's by McKeever and art by Eigel, but...
This book sucks.
It does. Like, I really want this to be good. Like, I want this to be how it used to be, and... First of all, I did not like the art in this issue at all. I don't know why.
They all looked like they were, like, 40 years old.
Yeah, they look way, way too old. And Tim Drake looked exactly like Dick Grayson, and I hate it when they do that. Like, make them separate. But also, I'm also really, really tired of the constant team changing. Like, just give me a team and stick with it for a while, but in this one, like, Supergirl leaves right off the bat, and we aren't even privy, really, to the conversation that led up to it. Blue Beetle is maybe on the team, maybe he isn't. They threw in a stupid Wonder Twins reference again, like, just to remind us.
Oh, you love your Wonder Twins.
That they're still there. And, it's just irritating. And I know, like, we all love Connor Kent and everything, but I'm so tired of that division between Cassie and Tim and Connor. So I think it needs to end.
I'm not a big fan of the Cassie-Tim thing. Like, I thought that was just something that might be played up, but them actually dating, like, I don't know. I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, neither do. Well, plus here's continuity, and this is me starting to nitpick, but Tim has a girlfriend in his book, so the fact that he's, like, somewhat dating Cassie here doesn't make any sense at all. So, I don't really like that. Plus, I don't know. I thought people were written kind of out of character. I thought Ravager was even more obnoxious than usual in this book.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, nothing sat right with me about this. And then, like, at the end, we get this kind of, like, they go to a meeting, and Tim kind of rallies the troops all for nothing. He's like, and we will get them! And, okay, meeting over. And I don't know. Like, it felt like it was not going anywhere. So I just don't get it.
Yeah, this book's kind of struggling. It just doesn't seem, it's kind of like what you're saying, like, it doesn't have a purpose. You know, you don't know what's going on, it's not leading up to anything, and it's just kind of there. It seems like it's a book that's just going through the motions.
Well, yeah, but with, like, a proper storyline behind it, like, it can be a really, really fun book.
Yeah, oh yeah. But, I mean, we've seen that, so.
Yeah, and I just miss that, basically. Like, there's a feeling that the Titans should have that it doesn't have right now.
A good X-Men book that came out this week is Astonishing X-Men number 24. I actually bought two covers. This is the only book that I buy variant covers on, and it has one of the best covers I've ever seen, and it's just like a variant cover of Kitty Pryde, which, if you're an X-Men fan, Kitty Pryde has a nice place in your heart. So this is actually Whedon's last issue in his run. He's doing an annual after this that's going to wrap up the whole story, but this is his last actual issue. And there's a lot of stuff going on. We're not going to talk too much about it. We know that Cyclops uses powers, you know, without his visor last issue, and it's alluding to the fact that he is not going to be able to do that for long. Hank talks to him, and Hank's like, you know, it's good to see you. It's good to see all of you. And Scott kind of turns away, and he says, well, don't get used to it. So, We don't know what that means. The overall story since Whedon was on the book is that there was this world called the Break World, and that Colossus is destined to destroy it. And that's what we've been really leading up to in the past couple of issues. And you find out that there's basically this reactor, and if Peter, you know, walks into it in his armored form, then the world is going to pretty much implode on itself. And at the very end of this issue, crap's going down, the X-Men look like they're about to lose, and Scott tells him to go into the reactor. So it cuts off there, and then the very last part of the story is that there's basically a whole, the whole time there's supposed to be this missile that's going to fire from the Break World and hit Earth. And Beast and Kitty Pryde, they're trying to stop this rocket. Kitty goes to phase through it to try to either get to the heart of it, to try to deactivate it, to scramble it. And when she phases through it, she realizes that there's nothing in there. And you realize that it's not a missile, it's not a rocket, but it's actually a bullet. And the metal that is in this world, somehow when Kitty phases through it, it has this weird effect on her. And so she basically passes out in the bullet, as the bullet heads towards Earth. So Whedon has said the whole time, ever since he started this, that, you know, this is going to be an X-Men team, and one of the team members is not going to make it out. And at this point, it looks like it's going to be Kitty Pryde.
You think they'd kill her? Like, that's...
I don't know. I have no idea. She's been kind of a main target just because Whedon has always said that Kitty was his favorite character, and so a lot of people thought, well, that's probably going to throw us off, and he's actually going to kill her. But I don't know. I mean, all the characters are main characters, so they can't really kill any of them. So, I don't know. I don't know. What they're saying is, though, is that it says one of them gets... they say that one of them doesn't get left behind, but one of them doesn't make it out. So I don't know if someone isn't going to be returning to Earth, and if that's going to be the case, but I don't care. It's Astonishing X-Men, Joss Whedon. I'll never not like it. I'll always give it an A+. And I'm looking forward to the annual that's going to wrap it up.
So is there just one more... The annual is left, and then it's gonna, and then it's done?
Well, Warren Ellis and Simone Bianchi, I think, are taking over the book at issue 25. So it's gonna, the book is going to be ongoing. I don't know if the team roster is going to change. That's never... None of that has been revealed yet. So I don't think we'll be seeing issue 25 for a while, but it's still going to be, you know, an ongoing series.
So have they collected... Have they put these in the trades yet? Or any part of it?
Yeah, the first two are in trades.
Okay. Because I'm kind of... Like, I'm thinking they might do an omnibus of this, because it's got such big acclaim around it.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's probably big enough for an omnibus, so I'm sure it will. I mean, this has been a huge seller for Marvel. And this is another thing. Like, this is in continuity, but it's not in continuity at all, basically. So this is a great standalone X-Men story, because it doesn't tie into any other books at all.
Yeah. Something I want to go over real quick. Are you buying Countdown by now?
No, I heard it's getting good, though. I heard this issue was good.
Yeah, it was. Basically, Earth 51, we find out, is the perfect Earth. Like, the monitors had, or one of the monitors had been protecting it. And it was, in, for all intents and purposes, the perfect Earth. And basically, that's all gone to pot now, because Monarch and his army have just come and decimated it. Like, thousands of people have died. The world is just basically, every city they go to is in ruins. We got some really cool Donna Troy moments in this, basically. She's coming out of the last couple issues as one of my favorite characters, and or reminding me why she's one of my favorite characters. Because basically, there were the evil counterparts on Earth 3 of everybody, and we found that there was an evil Donna Troy, and she had been recruited into Monarch's army and given a purpose. And basically, she was a grown-up Wonder Girl, and she was real bitchy and, you know, evil Wonder Girl. But basically, There was a nice showdown in the last issue of Countdown between her and Donna, basically, and they're fighting, and something that I like when they do in comics is kind of add that real-world perspective of their character, like, you know, Donna Troy, in the real world, as a character, Donna Troy does kind of seem redundant, and they've tried to put her into all kinds of different roles, and nothing's worked. Well, that's what the evil Donna Troy is shouting at our Donna as they're fighting, is she's like, you know, I went through the same motions as you, you know, I was Wonder Girl, I was Dark Star, and, you know, I was Troya, and all these other things, and, like, nothing fit. You know, you weren't meant to, you know, be here and all this kind of stuff, and she's like, who the hell do you think you are? And then Donna just, like, beats the shit out of her, and she's like, and it's such a cheesy line, because all I can think of is the Juggernaut line from X-Men, but I'm like, but she stands there, and she's like, I'm Donna Troy, bitch, and I'm like, yeah, Donna! And so basically from that, she steals, in this issue, she stole the Wonder Girl costume, and she goes to confront the leader of, or one of the leaders of Monarch's army, and basically gives a smackdown and takes control. So the tide has turned in a little bit of the Monarch War, and Donna's really taken charge, and she's kind of leading them like she would lead Amazons, which was very, very cool to see. And also, where we've left the Jason and Bruce Wayne of Earth 51, it's been really interesting, because this is the Bruce Wayne that Jason had wanted, because they've done a really good job at bringing Jason's character from, like, the angry person, whether justified or not, when he came back from the dead to where he is now. Because when he came back, he was pissed off at Bruce because Bruce never avenged him. And he thought, you know, he was kind of the Punisher of the DC, and he wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty because he had been killed. And he came back, and he doesn't really care how he came back, but, like, he was pissed at Bruce that Bruce never avenged him. And how many deaths could Bruce have prevented if he had just killed the Joker a long time ago? And basically, this is a Batman who did that. Like, Jason's death set this Batman off, and he started killing villains. And basically, that time was when the rest of the Justice League went into retirement. And Bruce was like, you know, they never asked why super villain crime never came back. It's like, I've been keeping it in check. And I've put every, you know, I've stopped every single thing. And I had to do it, you know, like a war. And, you know, everything like that. And he's really armored up, and basically, this one, he's like, he's recruiting Jason into his army, and he's like, I had this costume ready for you because I wanted you to be protected as you grew up and served in the war, but you were never able to, you died, or you were taken from me before you were ever able to try it on. And so basically, he's like, you know, let's not get confused here. I'm standing right here. You know, I'm not gone. And Batman's like, no, you're not. And then it pulls back to reveal that Jason's wearing the Red Robin costume.
Okay.
And so then they go into battle, and it's kind of cool because you got Batman and Jason fighting again side by side and everything like that. And he's like, hey, this is the part where you used to crack jokes. And there was a few bits of cheesy dialogue in there. But yeah, it was kind of cool to see. And then basically they get pinned down, and that's when we see Donna Troy come in with the army. So that was interesting. And then also we were left off with Superman Prime confronting one of the monitors assigned to protect the perfect Earth. And he's like, is this a joke? You know, you had it the whole time. And he's like, yeah, but it was the perfect Earth, and now things have, you know, gone to hell. And he shows him, and he shows who's responsible for it, Monarch. And he's like, they're ruining it! So basically Superman Prime has come off to, or just gets there at the end of the book to confront Monarch and take out Monarch. So we'll see where that goes, but I'm curious as to what is ever going to happen to the Superman Prime character. Like, are they just going to imprison him again?
Are they trying to redeem him now?
I don't think they could.
Yeah,
because
it doesn't sound like it.
There's so much that he's done at this point, but I'm wondering if they're going to kill him or how his character is going to play out.
So, but didn't they retcon it now so that Captain Atom is Monarch?
I think so.
Still not know that.
I think it is Captain Atom or a future version of Captain Atom or something like that.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, things are happening. So I'm still interested. Like, I'm really happy that it's just focusing on one set of things right now. Like, I don't really care about any of the other stories, but I'm really interested in this Monarch War. So the fact that we're not just getting 2 pages of one story and 2 pages of another story is really allowing this book to breathe a lot better.
Nice. I might have to start picking it up again.
So, yeah.
A book that I just want to touch on, Ultimates 3, number 2, came out. the first issue was definitely hit or miss. Jeff Loeb was writing it, and I thought that the story was a little bit and Joe Madureira was doing the art, which I loved, and I talked about how I was so happy about Joe Madureira being back, but the coloring was really off. And I was actually even listening to the Bendis tapes, you know, on Word Balloon, and they're doing a special Loeb report, and they're just asking all these questions to Jeff Loeb. And even Loeb talks about it, about how the book looked like crap because the colorings were just too dark. And I was like, well, that's cool, you know, to hear people actually say that in the industry. So this second issue, actually, it looks like a lot better. So I just wanted to let everyone know that if they weren't picking that up because of the art, that the art does look a lot better. And the story looks like it's going to get a lot better, too. Throw in Spider-Man, we're getting a little bit more of a Hawkeye backstory about his family dying. And it ends with Wolverine showing up and joining the team, too. So I think it's going to be a fun book, and just want to touch on that.
Okay.
The last book I wanted to talk about was Amazing Spider-Man number 548.
I can't believe you're still buying this.
This is my last Spider-Man book.
Wow.
This is my last issue of Amazing Spider-Man. I actually took it out of my box this week.
That's big.
That's it.
How long has it been since you haven't bought Amazing Spider-Man?
How long has it been since I have not?
Probably since
Ever since I got back into comics. I mean, I didn't read comics at all for about 2 years. So the last time I did not buy Amazing Spider-Man was 2001.
Wow. So tell us more about this. Like,
well, they wrapped up the first arc in Brand New Day. And I'm going to be completely honest. Like, the arc wasn't that bad for what it was, you know? They introduced this new character, Negative Man, and there was ties to the Mafia. And I mean, the story was what it was. It was just, like, a simple story. A couple of things that just kind of took me out of the book was, obviously, you know, my Peter Parker is with Mary Jane. Like, my Peter Parker is Mary. That's who I've known. So it's just hard to see that. And then we've seen that there's a mugger going around with, you know, Spider-Man's face. And that ended up getting resolved with the mugger being killed by someone else. But in the second issue of it, the mugger finds out that he has Spider-Man's web shooter. And if he has that, then that means he ran into Spider-Man. So somehow he knows who Spider-Man is, and he's going to use that against him. And that was just like,
that's kind of, it was, you know, in the face.
Yeah, it was using the secret identity. It was like, oh, his secret identity needs to be hidden. And that took me out of the story so much. And we find out that Negative Man, in his real persona, is leading the little soup kitchen that Aunt May works at. So that means Aunt May's in danger. And I'm just like, no, I'm not gonna pay for this. That's basically just, you know, I'm sure I'm going to pick up an issue here or there, but there's no way I'm gonna buy this 3 times a week, you know, and I'm not going to make a huge deal of it. I'm not gonna tell people not to buy it. I'm just saying, like, personally, like, I don't like this. You know, I've always had blind loyalty, but that's, you know, there gets to a point where just, like, I'm not going to just do this. I'm not going to throw, you know, hard-earned money to something that I really don't want to see. Something that I read, you know, also, 20 years ago.
$12. And so it's an expensive title to buy, yeah, too.
So I'm going to keep on reading Ultimate Spider-Man, and I'm going to be happy with that. And obviously I'm disappointed that I'm not going to be reading Amazing Spider-Man anymore. But, you know, it is what it is. I can't change anything. So that's it.
Wow. All right. Well, with that, we, in lieu of all the X-Men stuff that came out and the 5 different X-Men teams there are now, got to thinking that we haven't done our top 5 favorite teams throughout the eras. So gave it some thought, and probably none of these are going to be swinging for the fences decisions, or surprising, but
Yeah,
we'll start it off here. My number 5 team, I believe, is the Ultimates.
Okay,
And
that's good.
I read the, I've only read the first trade, and then I started reading Ultimates 3 and was needlessly to say not impressed.
You missed the best parts.
Why?
Because the end of Ultimates 2 is the best. That's not out in trade yet, but once that comes out, that is amazing.
Yeah, I'll probably read that when it comes out in trade, because that's how I read Ultimates 1, and I really enjoyed it. But, I don't know, like, first of all, I thought the characterizations were very good, how they brought... What that book seemed to me was exactly what the Ultimates line should be, was bringing these, archetype characters and putting them in the real world in the modern day.
Right.
And that's how I felt the Ultimates line was originally envisioned. That's how they did Ultimate Spider-Man. And so I thought it was great. I loved how they did Captain America and Iron Man and even the Hulk. Like, I've never liked the Hulk, but the Hulk in the Ultimates is actually scary. And I don't know why, if it's just that they make him more...
He really just had the idea that he was completely out of control.
Yeah,
I guess that
it's more monsterish too.
Right.
So I think for that, like, it was an actual threat. It was actually scary. But there's also, and it was, I don't know, there was a really, really good team dynamic there. And I think a lot of it that helped me was the artwork in that book was just jaw-droppingly spectacular. Like, the detail that goes into some of those pages where you open it up and you see how the fight in New York is, like, devastated certain areas, and, like, the detail, I can't even describe it. It was fantastic. But very, very good book. Really, that was one of my first kind of stepping stones into a lot of those characters in Marvel, like, the non-Spider-Man or X-Men characters. That's how I learned about Iron Man and Captain America and stuff like that, so...
Yeah, it's a great book. My number 5 is the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, good one. I wouldn't even thought of them as a team, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of not a team, but they are. And the thing about the Corps is that, and Eric and I have talked about this, is that, I mean, the Corps book right now is really good, but that usually isn't the case. Usually the Corps book sucks, and usually I don't like the Corps, except for the moments where the Corps shows up. And it totally makes up for it, like, in something like Infinite Crisis or in the Sinestro Corps War. I mean, in any kind of big comic book story, you always have a rally moment, and no team does that better than the Corps.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just basically, like, when you see the Corps coming in, you know that, you know, crap's going down, and you know that it's a big deal. And that's basically, just for that simple reason, that's why I love the Corps.
Yeah, and it was kind of hard for us because we were big fans of when the Corps was wiped out, and that was such a great story development. You know, when they came back, it was just like, okay, well, we're back where we started. But there, for those moments when they show up, it's like, oh, hell yeah! And especially with the Sinestro Corps War, it's like you really feel like the Corps is a force to be
very big threat right now. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like when they put their foot down, like, you stand at attention. It's like, damn, yeah, I'm ready. So, that's good. Very, very good. My number 4 is the Justice League.
Okay.
It's good. I think mostly I like it from the cartoons, because I think they got the dynamic and the general feel of the Justice League mostly correct there. Grant Morrison's run was very good. I read a little bit of the 80s stuff, which was more comical, but I didn't really like it at the time when I was a kid. I just didn't appreciate it as much. But I love it when you have a really, really good just kind of dynamic between, like, Batman and Superman and Green Lantern and The Flash, and have them hang out. And just to have, like, those personalities, because they are all very different personality-wise, and have them, like, all put in the same room and hang out and talk to each other and see how they interact with each other. And it's fun to see when a new member comes in and have Oliver Queen, like, pardon me, like, I love Identity Crisis as a story, and that was essentially essentially almost an Oliver Queen story, but it was a Justice League story told through the eyes of Oliver Queen.
Right.
And there was something about that, how it was, like, the Justice League was a force, and they talk about it, how the Titans are a family, the society, teaches you how to work well together, but the League teaches you how to fight, and they are a threat as well, and it's, I think there's so much history there and stuff like that, that I really do like it when you have those character interactions. So,
yeah. My favorite part of the Justice League, especially on the cartoon, is when they're all eating in the cafeteria in the Watchtower.
That is pretty good.
I love that. I love seeing that. Because really, there has to be a cafeteria up there, and people are hungry, so they're going to eat. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's just those moments, like those downtime moments, when you kind of see like what they're doing when they relax and stuff like that. It's just fun. Yeah. It's just fun.
My number four team is the Young Avengers, who we've talked about a little bit already. I pretty much have said everything already, but it's just what I said. Like, I just love the fact that the Young Avengers is a perfect mix of the OC, which is something that Alan Heiberg, you know, was a writer on, and a superhero comic, because you care just as much about these real characters as you do their, you know, their superhero personas. And it's very modern, and it's just very real. I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, two of the main characters are gay, and they're in relationship with each other. And I think that that's something that's good. Like, I think that's something that you need to see in comic books, because that's where we are right now. That's our lives, and that's the world that we're living in. And I think Young Avengers is a book that really reflects, like, our current culture. And I hope it comes out sometime soon. So that's my number four pick.
All right. My number three pick is Judd Winnick's Outsiders.
And okay.
I really liked this book when it came out. It has fallen far from what it originally was. But I really liked the team dynamic with it. It wasn't supposed to be like the Titans. This wasn't supposed to be a family or anything like that. It was started by, you know, Roy Harper and Dick Grayson, which are two of my favorite of the older original Titans anyway. And they got a force of people together that they could just go out and fight with. And they, you know, wouldn't be a family. It wouldn't be, you know, something that everyone cares about each other and is buddy-buddy and everything like that. But it was really good. They introduced a lot of new interesting characters to that book. But also, they had a very good dynamic. It's just, we're not going to be responsive, we're going to be proactive, and we're going to go out and we're going to fight these threats before they even become threats. We're going to go out and put out the fires before they grow too big. And there was some moments in that book where it was just like, damn, like, they really did questionable things. Like, they were very kind of a covert ops team too, and they did foul up a lot, though, which became a problem with them dealing with Checkmate and stuff like that, because it brought attention to them. But like, there was a whole part of it where a lot of them had faked their deaths so they could react or operate even more covertly. And there was one moment where like Superman came into the book and told off Dick Grayson, and Dick Grayson flat out threatened him. He's like, you know, I know how to take you down, and look, we're putting out these threats that you're not putting out, which really you should be doing. So it's like, just to see Dick Grayson stand up to Superman, it's like, damn, like, it was a great book. And plus, I love that older generation of Titans, and I felt like this kind of became their book for a little while, or at least for two of them. That dynamic changed very swiftly when Dick Grayson left the book, and then Roy left the book also to join Justice League. So, yeah, I think that early Winnick run was one of my favorites. It felt like how Titans should be if it was like a mid 20 something Titans.
Right.
So.
Alright, fair enough. My number three is also the Ultimates, like you've already said. I was a huge fan of the Ultimates with Mahler and Hitch, and for the reasons that Eric said, is that it's basically, the Ultimates is not really a superhero book. The Ultimates is basically, it's a S.H.I.E.L.D. book. Like, it's, you know, what if there were superpowered people, but they were part of a government team? It just felt so, it really felt so real. I mean, Eric was talking about, like, the attacks in New York and the Hulk, and, I mean, not only, like, the art and the detail and the things that you saw, but how they went about doing things. I mean, there were points where they dealt with stuff overseas, and, you know, Captain America had to question, you know, what he was doing, and was he going overseas to fight because there was something really going on, or was he going overseas to fight because he was cleaning up his own government's mess? And you know, we all know the story about how Captain America is a man out of time, but this book is, it examines it a lot deeper, you know, what it means for Steve Rogers to have been the World War II hero, but then to be living and fighting, you know, a different war in the year 2007.
Yeah, it was good.
And it just had so many battles. The Ultimates, the first volume was great, but the second one is one of the best things I've ever read. You know, the very final issue, like, my fists were clenched when I was reading it, just because there's so much at stake, you know, it's so intense, and you're so caught up in it, and the characters are so real, and it's like James Bond meets, I don't know, just World War II. It's just amazing, and Jeff Loeb has definitely taken it in a different, totally different direction, and I still respect that for what it is, but when I think about the Ultimates, I'm going to think about, you know, Millar and Hitch. So that's my number three.
Okay. My number two is the Phase 2 New Avengers, and this is the group...
Oh, that's a good one. That's a very good one.
Yeah, post-Civil War, when they became kind of the underground Avengers group, I love this, and a lot of it, like, Brian Bendis deserves all the credit for, or most of the credit for the way he writes the characters and the dynamic in the group, because they are always constantly under this threat now of being discovered. Like, they have to be underground. They are always in hiding. And Luke Cage, man, where did this guy come from? Because he is badass.
Yep.
Like, he is just awesome. And I love this book because it introduced kind of that Skrull threat. And, like, when that first happened, once I figured out what the weight of that was, I was like, okay, that's good. Yeah. I was just really into it. I think Doctor Strange is written really, really interesting. Like, I've never been into even finding out about that character, and I just kind of, like, I'll read him because he's on this team, but he's actually kind of funny. I like him in this book.
Yep.
And I think Spider-Man's written incredibly well. I think Wolverine is... I like how he's written as kind of... He's kind of the vet in this book, even though everyone's kind of been around the block now in this book, but he seems kind of like he's the vet.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoy that, and it's, I don't know, there's just a really fun dynamic about that, just because they are always in hiding, and there is a lot of tension, and I do enjoy Hawkeye's character as well, or Ronan, whatever, but I don't know, there's always that element of danger, like, they're always constantly on the run, or they always have to, I don't know, put out threats, but do it kind of on the quiet side, because they're on the wrong side of the law now, so...
I think the good thing about New Avengers is that the Avengers is pretty much the flagship title for Marvel, and it hasn't been that in, like, 20 years.
Well, I think, I feel like Mighty Avengers kind of fills that spot more than the New Avengers does, though.
I think Mighty Avengers is supposed to, but it doesn't. I think both of them are supposed to, but I think New Avengers is the fan favorite. Like, I think, especially, I mean... The Skrull reveal started in New Avengers, and I, you know, it might be because Mighty Avengers has been late, but I feel like the main things that are happening in the Marvel Universe, they all come back to New Avengers.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of the central core, it seems like, because everything that happens seems to happen through that book.
Yep.
So.
It's a good pick. My number two, it's my wild card, it is Generation X, which was the new recruit of X-Men in the early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
Never heard of Generation X?
Explain that to me now.
Well, Generation X, I don't even know when it came out. It was probably 94, maybe. And it was basically four 13-year-old boys. And lo and behold, at that moment, I probably was, you know, I had happened to be a 13-year-old boy. And it was just the story of new recruits of the X-Men. And they were taught by Emma Frost, the White Queen, and Sean Cassidy, Banshee. And Jubilee was kind of the leader, but she was basically the only student there that you knew before. The rest were all new characters, and it was a pretty short-lived story. It was written by Scott LaBelle, and the art was by Chris Bachalo. And I don't know, like, I've always loved... the New Mutants. I've always loved New X-Men Now and Generation X Then, because, you know, you take the whole team drama thing and you add superpowers, especially with mutants, because it's a different animal. Because with mutants, you know, their powers usually aren't nice, and their powers usually affect them. And there was a kid, Chamber, who, although he looks a lot different now, he's in New Warriors currently. But Chamber's mutant power was that he had a power core in his chest, basically, of psychic energy. But when his powers manifested, it blew up. And so Chamber basically had a huge gaping hole, you know, 3 feet wide in his entire body. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, an average mutant is going to have to deal with, because they're not normal. And I just think it's one of the best books that's ever come out. And you can pick it up and trade for probably like $20, but that's always had like a very strong place in my heart. So that's my number two pick.
Okay. But yeah, I never even heard of that. My number one pick.
Not surprised.
Surprise is the Teen Titans. And I have
Really?
Yeah, I know, big surprise, huh? But I'm gonna zero in on two specific eras. The new Teen Titans by Marv Wolfman and George Perez, and then also the Geoff Johns Titans.
Those are Titans.
Yeah, I feel like those two eras signify what the Titans could be at their very best. And the whole premise of the series is like, these are the kids that live in their mentor's shadow. And this is a place for them to get together, to be with other people. I think it's a lot kind of like the X-Men dynamic, is just for people in a very odd position in life to come and talk to and be around other people in that same type of position.
Right.
And so I think that's what I like most about the book is, yeah, there's the fighting and the action, and that's all good and fine too, but just the character melodrama of it, like a lot of it is just kids, you know, learning to be with each other, dating and talking and learning to interact with each other. And like it is kind of a high school drama book in capes. But there are really some great moments, and there have been some great, really great characters that have come out of this book. I mean, like Cyborg and Raven and Beast Boy and all them, you know, they start in the new Teen Titans, and they're fantastic. But especially with John's run is, I don't know, it really made me care more for characters that I liked, but they maybe were languishing a bit, like Bart Allen. Like, I liked him as Impulse, but he really had nowhere else to go.
Right.
And from that first story arc, when he got his knee blown open and he switched to Kid Flash and stuff like that, like, it was just fantastic. And the whole Death of Donna Troy thing, where there was a transition from one generation of Titans to another, there was a passing of the torch. And, you know, that's DC's thing, is their legacy aspect. And I think all of their legacy characters, all of the true legacy characters, come out of this book or have some relation to this book. And it's kind of their proving ground, it's kind of their training ground. And it's, when it's good, it's damn good. So, I love it.
Yeah, that's true. I'd have to agree. That's a great one. I love, a little thing that I really loved about John's run is that he explained that the Titans only go to the tower on the weekends. And so, really, you can just see them acting normal, you know, through their whole week, having to go to school, doing their superheroing on the side, but then just like waiting for the weekend to where they can go and hang out with other people who understand them, because no one else does. And I thought that was really like something very simple, but very profound, because it was just like you were saying, there's no one else in the world like these kids, and all they have is each other. So yeah, I Geoff Johns' run was amazing. The older Titan stuff, I'm just starting to go back and read. And, you know, the current Titans aren't that great, but it's always going to bounce back.
Yeah. Very, very excited about the animated Judas contract that's coming out. Yeah, the movie. Oh.
Yeah, because, I mean, Deathstroke's one of the best villains, and that's a Titan villain.
Yeah, he came out of the Titans books, and now he's, like, a threat to, like, the Justice League. I mean, he's one of the main threats of the DCU, so, yeah, I think that movie is going to be fantastic. I cannot wait for that.
Yeah. Do you want to take a wild guess of my number one?
Oh, I believe it's an X-Men team of some sort.
It is. Well, I couldn't really pick
one. Is it the original?
It's not the original five.
Or is it the 90s
It's the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, I it's either the 90s or the giant size X-Men number one team.
Well, that's what I think of when I think of the 90s, is that giant size X-Men number one team.
Well,
or the cartoon X-Men.
Right, right. You're thinking about the second giant size. There's the first one too.
Oh,
the first one was with first one was with Banshee and that's when they first introduced Wolverine and Storm. Second one was the Jim Lee cover, basically.
Yeah, I'm thinking of it.
And yeah, that's pretty much my favorite, just because. I don't know. I mean, I think as a kid, that's when X-Men became really accessible to me. It was really hard to try to go back and get all the stuff before, and, you know, like we've talked about, the hardest thing to do is get into X-Men continuity. It's really hard. And there's no way to do it. You just have to do it. You just have to throw yourself in and just start learning. But when Giant Size X-Men or just regular X-Men came out, you know, I picked it up, and especially as a kid, like, Jim Lee's art was amazing. You know, that's something like you've never seen before, because it just jumped off the page.
Back then, it was really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, back then, it was really, like, it was truly innovative. Like, it was so detailed that was something that you would never see in a comic book before. And this is when comics started to get, you know, better paging, and it was, like, comics really started to evolve at this point. And something that wasn't for the best at a part of the late 90s, but we're going to forget about that. But after getting introduced to X-Men, I mean, the whole thing is that the X-Men are a group of people who are different, and that's what it's all about, and everyone can relate to that. I mean, everyone can relate to the feeling of not being a part of something, or feeling exiled, or feeling insecure, and that's what the heart of the X-Men is. It's about all these people who, they had no control of it, but they were born with, you know, these abilities that sometimes they don't want, and that sometimes are, like, hinder their lives, and it's how they deal with that, and the family aspect of that, and that's really where I'm attracted to the X-Men, because it is a family. You know, you really get to know these characters, and it's, you know, I look at X-Men continuity, but I'm the first one also to say that it gets really ridiculous at sometimes, you know, and I think that we're kind of seeing that with Messiah Complex, and I just sometimes just want them to dumb it down, to be like, this is a book, this is what it's about, you know, just pay attention. So,
what do you think?
I'm not getting that.
What do you think about, like, the number of characters? Because I think that's where, and I think a lot of people think that's where the book gets bogged down, is there's so many characters.
I don't know. I mean, my perspective on everything is really hard, because I've done my work, and so I know all these characters, but it's very hard, too, because there are characters that I love that I don't see enough of. You know, Iceman is my favorite X-Men character, and I've never really felt that I've seen Iceman get the credit that he deserves. And I think that is really sad. And I mean, there's nothing that you can do about that, though. I mean, you can't really kill off all the characters. I guess going back, I think that they probably should not have released as many new characters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because looking back, when you had just the original five, I mean, you knew those characters. You know, you were very intimate with each of those characters, because there's only five. And now, I mean, there's hundreds of different variations of X-Men. But, I mean, I think that's also a strength, too, because it is like a community, it is a family, and that's part of it. I mean, we're going to take off the Grant Morrison aspect of it, because everyone would be a mutant in that aspect, but other than that, I mean, that's what it's all about. It is the fact that it is about mutants, and it's about people, it's not about just the X-Men, you know? And sometimes the line gets very blurry between the two, and if it's done right, it's amazing, and if it's done wrong, well, it's still good, but it's not great.
Okay, well. All right, well, that does it for us. If you want to tell us about your top five favorite teams, you can email us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com, or you can go to our website at www.fanboystrikeback.com, and that's where we post our written reviews every week, and also just general information that we find interesting. Movie news is on there quite a bit, interviews, things like that. sometimes just our general thoughts on what's happening in comics. So also there we have a link to our forums, and that's where we can go and talk about topics that aren't discussed in the podcast, and you know, you guys can start topics and see what we think, or we always like to see what you guys think about the topics we post, so always welcome to go on there. We are also on the MySpace.
Yep, myspace.com/thefanboystrikeback. You can come there. We have our Book of the Week blog, be our friend, do the whole MySpace thing. And then you can catch us on iTunes, Podcast Alley, any podcatcher out there. If you do like the show, please leave us a review or any feedback. You know, let us know what you like, what you don't like. We're always looking for more feedback, more ways to improve the show. And like Eric said, come by the site, come by the forums. We talked a lot about Messiah Complex, and we just posted some interviews with Mike Carey on the site, so you can go there and check that out and see what he thought about the ending and where that's going to go. And head to the forums, come tell us what you guys thought about Messiah Complex, what you're thinking about Brand New Day, all that stuff. So I think that does it. I'm David.
I'm Eric.
And we'll see you guys next week.